Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Wall Street Breakfast, your daily source of market news and analysis. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Welcome to Seeking Alpha Editor's Roundtable, What Moved Markets This Week, the week ending Friday, May 14, 2021. Quite an interesting week, a week of two halves, if you will. The first 3 days saw some pretty dramatic selling, particularly for tech stocks. All of this apparently due to inflation concerns. The CPI report on Wednesday was well ahead of estimates, but that situation reversed on Thursday, and today stocks are up again. We are still looking at a loss for the week for major indexes. The Dow is down about 1.3%. NASDAQ is down about still over 2%. S&P down about half of 1%. So, well, it remains to be seen if we'll be able to get green for the week. I suspect not, but what do I know? My colleagues maybe have a better idea, and I will introduce them now in no particular order. Brad Olison, VP of News, Kim Kahn, Senior News Editor, Stephen Alfer, Managing Editor of Breaking News, and all of it hosted and moderated by me, Nathaniel E. Baker, Senior Editor of Strategic Contributors. Let's start with Kim to give us the big picture view of what moved markets this week.
Well, from a macro perspective, it was a tough week for the Fed. I mean, as you mentioned, you had the big CPI number. You had a headline inflation above 4% year over year, and that obviously spooked a lot of people in the higher valuation areas of the stock market. So inflation came in higher, but then the rest of the economic indicators showed some potholes in the recovery. So you had retail sales flat and expected a 1% rise, and then you had an unexpected decline in consumer sentiment. So on the one hand, you've got the Fed looking at data and saying, well, we still need to do as much as we can because we're not getting back on track, and then we've got people like saying, well, you're not doing anything with this soaring inflation pressures we're getting. And for the market, stock market overall, I often talk about technical levels, but I think it was interesting this week. We had the S&P 500, bouncing against its 50-day moving average downside, and then coming back from that. On the other hand, you've got the NASDAQ, which is bumping up against its 100-day moving average, and it's about 100. They're both about 100 points away from those averages today, and we'll see how they do further in today's trading session. And then you've got the 10-year Treasury yield bouncing up against 1.7%, which after the inflation did, it thought we could kind of push back to the recent highs, but it's since retreated.
Interesting, but we still don't have anything really to point to this reversal, the cause for the reversal. I guess maybe some of the data did show that the Fed is vindicated with their view of the transitory inflation, as they're calling it. But maybe I suspect it's just that people had some cash from selling earlier in the week and needed to put it to use. And with the risk-free rate close to zero, that is what they did and are doing. But Brad, tell us about the winners and losers for the week.
Yeah, well, quickly on that point, with regard to some of the, I guess you could call them dip buyers, we did recover in the middle part of the week. I think the latest flow data indicates that billions more came into equity funds. So the passive investing crowd is definitely helping support some of the market here this week. But definitely the damage was done. It's not just because the main averages are around, have recovered substantially. The biggest names to lose were some of the FANG names, right? So I think we're speaking, I don't want to call it froth, but those are definitely the growth names. Those are definitely the names that have gotten a little bit ahead of themselves. And with those, you're talking about the NY FANG index, for example, with Tesla, one of the biggest losers, down close to about 13%, Alibaba, Nvidia, Twitter, Alphabet. All of those saw pretty heavy selling, and the heavy selling is still left their mark on the shares. The early in the week selling for these biggest infotech names was the fourth largest in 2021. And I think, I don't know if you really want to call the IPO and SPAC market frothy, but it definitely was earlier in this year. But we saw a lot of those big names in that area take a big hit. You had Honest Company, that's Jessica Alba's company, Coupang, and Bumble all fell below their IPO price this week, which is a very, you know, tends to be a rather ominous sign. Bumble also had earnings, and so that partially contributed to some of the weakness. But other main, more mainstream IPOs, like recent IPOs rather, like Open Door, DoorDash, Airbnb, also were a bit weaker amid some of the earnings reports. Obviously, the biggest loser that we can't forget to talk about is Tesla. Just a slow drain throughout the entire week, down, like I said, about 13%. It probably wasn't helped by the gyrations in the crypto market. You had their CEO jawboning a lot, whether it was on Dogecoin or Bitcoin, reversing some of his stance on some of that. Probably didn't inspire a whole lot of confidence, but nothing particularly impactful on the news front to lead to some of that share sell-off, just maybe just some of it coming off the top. On the positive side, we had some earnings, but one interesting one I think that was perfect timing was NortonLifeLock, which is a consumer cybersecurity name that was rose about 20% on the week after earnings. Just happened to coincide with one of the biggest hacks that we've seen in the U.S. for quite some time. This was the ransomware attack on Colonial Pipeline. So that helped some of the cybersecurity names that were more enterprise focused, as you could call it. NortonLifeLock, I doubt, is going to be a beneficiary of this, but names like FireEye and Akamai and to some extent maybe Proofpoint, the hack ETF is one area to play that theme. But those are some of the more, I guess, news impacted movers of the week outside some of the earnings developments.
Yes. On the corporate news front and other things, Stephen Alfer, what were you watching?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we should discount the hack of the Colonial Pipeline as kind of the reason maybe for the sell off. I mean, number one is you had markets that are really perky, have been going pretty much up in a straight line. So they were, there didn't take much news, I think, much negative news maybe to send them lower for a few days, and the pictures of people lining up to get gas. It was enough to bring whether they were doing it because gas was really running out or whether they were just hoarding it in the same way people were hoarding toilet paper last year. The image was not great, and it brought back memories of the 70s. And I think markets were perky, and I think that was enough to get a sell off going. Throwing a fast inflation number too, and people just hit the sell button on some hot stocks. To me, the big news of the week was Elon Musk and Bitcoin. I think we can safely say this phase of the bull market in Bitcoin is finished. If 2007, that doesn't mean I'm not talking about long-term Bitcoin. I have no idea, but 2017 was very much retail driven, right? These exchanges began to open with, hey, I can start buying Bitcoin rather easily. And that drove this massive bull market. The Bitcoin of 2020 and 21 was institutional acceptance. Whether it be MicroStrategy or Tesla, insurance companies, hedge funds getting into it, I think we can pretty safely say that ended, and Bitcoiners are fooling themselves if they think it's going to be, some big insurance company tomorrow is going to announce a massive Bitcoin buy. They're not. Any corporate board, any insurance company announces a Bitcoin buy, they're going to have to deal with Larry Fink and the ESG folks. You're boiling the oceans. You got to have the answer for that. Mm-hmm. And so I think this phase is done, and it's, you're going to require, some new catalyst or some new group of investors to come in to take Bitcoin to, that six figures that everybody's been talking about.
Stephen Alfer with the interesting bearish call on cryptos, a little uncharacteristic if you've watched his other clips. Yeah.
Not just necessarily bearish. I'm not saying Bitcoin's going to go down 80% like it did in 2018, but I think that kind of that next leg of the bull market, is on hold.
Very interesting indeed. I wonder if the Elon Musk's Saturday Night Live appearance in retrospect will prove to be his high watermark. If you look at how Tesla has performed since then, and just in general, Bitcoin and stuff as well. So
It reminds me of the video game covers, right? The curse of showing up on the video game cover, you know, whoever is featured, they have an injury or their team spectacularly fails. And maybe an SNL performance is the stock market corollary.
Yeah. Yes, the old Sports Illustrated covers, for those of us old enough to remember magazines, had a similar thing.
A lot of conspiracy theories that Elon was gotten to by woke cast members of SNL, and suddenly view turned on Bitcoin.
Right, but he didn't say anything particularly bearish. Well, I guess the one thing where he's called it did he call it a fraud or what did he say?
Dogecoin.
Yeah. During the weekend update, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the next segment of the show where we discuss our favorite stories, Seeking Alpha articles, or other things that caught our interest this week. And let's start with Kim.
Well, I can go back to the GameStop squeeze of January because Bank of America came out with some research. And about the time they were having the Senate hearings, Gabe Plotkin, who from Melvin Capital, who was on the wrong side of the GameStop trade, who said like one of the outcomes would be that hedge fund data scientists would all be, combing, Wall Street Bets and other kind of, message boards and social media to see what the next kind of, retail attack would be, which stock would be. And so B of A decided to look into that and, hooked up with a team that that tracks stock mentions on Wall Street Bets and applied it to, the data they saw to see if there's any kind of way that they predicted what they call an up crash. And so if chatter increases on Wall Street Bets, is this going to, can we kind of predict when these stocks are going to go through the roof? And they came up with a kind of short answer with no, with a but, which is there's absolutely no tell on any of these specific stocks. Certainly not, GameStop did have, its run, AMC apparently had its run, but the mentions only started after the run, and then their Bed Bath Beyond didn't really get much mentions at all, and still kind of participated in the squeeze. So, but they also said that it's still worth tracking, and they came up with their screen of 20 stocks that that get the most mentions, and actually, quite a few of them have bigger than normal standard deviation moves, so it's still worth kind of paying attention to.
Interesting. I learned this week that there are a couple of words that are not allowed on Wall Street Bets on the subreddit. And one of them is, believe it or not, stonks. You cannot say stonk. If you do, your message gets deleted. And also any mention of crypto is also outlawed. So that's interesting. All right, Brad.
So just talk about Dogecoin, I guess, continually. It's not my area of expertise, but obviously Elon Musk's preceding, I guess, the news of him showing up on SNL with some sort of Dogecoin related appearance got the feverish punters going, and Dogecoin just soared, obviously, into his appearance. And I guess for the more trading inclined listeners on this call, it should be no surprise that once he appeared, Dogecoin just sold off 50%. Sell the news, right? Not that he said anything terrible, but it was fascinating, and I thought that was just interesting, and I don't know whether it had anything to do with it, but the side story was that a Goldman Sachs, I think he was a managing director, ended up resigning from Goldman Sachs after making a mint on his Dogecoin investments. Hopefully he sold and resigned before Elon Musk's appearance on SNL, otherwise he'd be 50% poorer, but just... it all seemed to come to a head this week. I don't think it was a surprise. My tip off was being in the post office on Saturday morning and hearing a 12 or 13 year old boy try to sell his 18 year old sister into why Dogecoin was amazing.
Yeah, the old mother-in-law indicator when your mother-in-law starts talking about it.
And yes, post offices still do exist. Just
wondering. Yeah, no, of course they do. You need somewhere to send these Amazon packages and stuff, right? All right, Stephen, what about you?
I'm going to change my favorite story, and I just continue on with what Brad talked to, and it's just kind of again kind of an ugly part of social media in the last few years is this kind of disability for these highly successful guys to go on to Twitter or whatnot and move markets in that way. And I think with these guys are Elon's obviously an easy target, but Chamath and Bill Ackman and other names escape me. The Winklevoss twins, kind of getting on Twitter and egging things on. I think with great power comes great responsibility, and you know, it's real ugly. And, you know, if you remember during the whole GameStop thing, Tremath going on and egging people on to buy GameStop and or egging people on to buy his various SPACs and Virgin Galactic. And while he was, by the way, selling, right? And there was an article in Bloomberg today. Hey, the king of the SPACs, his SPACs are all crumbling, but he's doing fine. Well, of course he's doing fine. He's a billionaire. He's off in his seaside mansion throwing these tweets out. And you know, it's unpleasant, and we have to report on it. That's the job we have. I mean, you know, Elon Musk said something about Dogecoin again last night and drove the price right back up 50%, right? And I mean, they're toying with people. And, you know, it's our job to report on it. It's pretty unpleasant. And, you know, and I mentioned Bill Ackman too. Bill Ackman coming on in the middle of the panic last March and basically crying on CNBC while his traders are out there buying up everything in sight. Right. Mm-hmm. And then a week later, you know, he leaks out to the press how brilliant he was to buy right at the bottom, you know? It's unpleasant and an unpleasant part of modern life.
All right. Good. You have to give Ackman a little bit of credit on that whole hell is coming thing as far as being a convincing actor, if he was indeed acting, because that was, I mean, that had me. I mean, I saw
it's
that.
It's con artist stuff.
Well, and, let's remember with that, though. I think that was there was right around the same time that the Fed kind of came in, right? So there we kind of conflate the two. Yes, I agree. It's kind of on one side of the mouth he's saying that, you know, it's all over for everyone while he's buying, but then it also happened to come with a huge amount of government support, you know, with very nice timing as it turned out for everyone. But I agree. I think the solution is for people to be sophisticated, and I mean, it's hard to say that, but anticipate these people speaking on, you know, jawboning and talking their book. That's been happening for a long time. I think if you're smart and you want to capitalize on it, you should try to do that. Unfortunately, a lot of people do get hurt. I think as we saw in the Wall Street Bets saga, as Kim was mentioning before, there were a lot of the people who were in those forums were actually very sophisticated people kind of masquerading as beginning investors. Not everyone. And it is unfortunate, though, to Steve's point, how you may see a lot of things happening and you want to participate like this 14-year-old kid in the post office, but it may not be for you.
Mm. Although it's not really all that different from other bubbles we've seen in the past. Those of us old enough to remember the tech bubble in the late 90s, a lot of very similar stuff. Technology was different.
Now this stuff goes on. It's gone on all for centuries, but you know, Twitter or Facebook, whatever, they have the instant ability to reach millions and to move markets almost instantly that they didn't have before. And I don't know.
And there's really no way to regulate it. You're going to get this kind of, you know, hand-wringing you get from like you did of the GameStop thing in Washington. And then the result is, well, okay, no more confetti on the Robinhood app.
Right. Yeah. So yeah. Right. Right. So yeah. I'm not calling for any kind of censorship. I'm not calling for Tremath to be brought up for hearings or anything like that. Like I said, with great power comes great responsibility, and I think, you know, it's kind of up to those guys to chill a little bit.
Yeah. Last word on this, by the way, if you guys think Twitter is toxic, and I'm not saying it isn't, wait until you check out Instagram. It's really bad, especially with the political takes. And apparently, the worst of them all is TikTok. Whatever it's called, which I don't have installed because I don't want my data to go to the Chinese government. But apparently a lot of people don't have that reservation. All right, that's all we got this week. Thank you for being with us. But if you are listening to this, then please do check out the video, which has a whole bunch of really cool stuff assembled by our outstanding video editing team. And that airs on Friday afternoon, right around market close, 4 p.m. Eastern. To get it, go to seekingalpha.com/videos. And with that, we thank you for watching and listening and look forward to speaking to you again next week.
That concludes today's Wall Street Breakfast. Thank you for listening. For the best investment analysis and news on the web, go to seekingalpha.com. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can sign up for our other podcasts, Behind the Idea, Essay for FAs, Let's Talk ETFs, the Cannabis Investing Podcast, and Marketplace Roundtable on those platforms as well. Have a great day.